Community is attractive. We all want a place where we belong, where we'll be accepted. We were made for relationships, not talking about boy, girl, husband, wife relationships, for sharing our lives, for openness, for honesty, for love. We were made for community. And we see communities being formed all the time. For people who like playing football. For people who are from the same country. For people who are the same age and stage. Maybe a new mum's group. We want to be in relationship with people, to be loved, to share our lives with people. Because too often our lives are full of broken relationships, broken families, broken relationships with different people, workplaces with divisions and factions, streets with gossip, school playgrounds with bullying, countries divided by class and age and geography and color and vote. We don't like these divisions, but we play our part in causing them and developing them, even though we know that life would be so much better without division. A perfect community. A community where instead of gossip, there's encouragement. Instead of hate, there's love. Instead of division, there is unity. We long for that community. The Bible's answer to that sense of division, for that division and brokenness, is the church. A community of people rescued by Jesus and united to him and therefore to one another. We are the answer to that division and brokenness as Christ works in us and through us. Now we're starting a new term today. And before we return to our autumn Matthew series, which we'll go back to next Sunday, we've got a Sunday today to revisit our mission statement and think about what we're doing here as a church. Let me provide some background for those who are a bit newer. Kensington Baptist Church used to be a church for people all over Bristol. A church with a reputation for strong Bible teaching to which people would come from all over the city. Around 5 years ago, that changed, and we decided that we wanted to start new congregations in different areas of the city where we could better reach the city. So we started the church, Village Church in Emerson's Green, the northeast of the city. More effective at reaching the people of Emerson's Green than everyone coming to Easton. And BC3, the Bristol City Centre Church in the center, more effective at reaching people in the city center. Those congregations with focuses on Emerson's Green, on city center, which left the Eastern congregation now with a special focus on Eastern, our local area. But slightly different to BC3 and Village Church. Because Easton still looks a lot like the old Kensington, still with people coming from all over the city. So Easton's a bit of a mix, a bit of the old Kensington, but with a special focus on our local area of Easton. A year ago, we spent time asking questions of the congregation and thinking together as a church and thinking together as leaders to know how we should be working as a church. Some things never change. Our central beliefs in Jesus, the Bible, salvation, our purpose to glorify God, our general mission to make disciples of all nations. These things never change. They're the same for every single church wherever they are. But some things will change as the local area of Easton changes, as we as a community change. Our specific mission will change. How do we function as an Eastern congregation in 2016? That will change from time to time. So a year ago, came up with a mission statement. You'll have been given it as you came in, that card. Here it is. We are a Christ-centered community, diverse but united in him and equipped to live and speak for him in Eastern and throughout Bristol. I'm going to briefly explain this, and then we'll spend the rest of our time looking at the first half of it, okay? We are a diverse community. Look around you. Different ages, different colors, different everything. And yet we are one in Christ Jesus, united to him and therefore to one another. We want to live out that unity and be a real community. And as we do that, people outside will see our community and ask us, what makes us one? And we answer, Jesus. We want to equip one another to live and speak for Jesus. We want less of an emphasis on centralized ministries and be equipping all of us to go out and live and speak for Jesus where we are, in our workplaces, in our homes, in our neighborhoods, with our family, friends, neighbors, schoolmates. But we also recognize that we have a responsibility to the local people of Easton. God placed us here 130 years ago after the fire took the other building a little way down the street. And over the last 20, 50, 60 years, he's brought other people to our area. Jamaicans, Somalis, Afghans, Pakistanis, Indians, many of whom don't know Jesus Christ on our doorstep. And we have a responsibility to tell them about Jesus. No one else is going to. Home groups are a great place both to live out our Christ-centered community and to be equipping one another to live and speak for Jesus where we are. Where we can open up in a smaller group and build deeper relationships and friendships. That's our mission statement in brief. So let's think about the first half of it. God's brought at least 27 nations together under one roof. Maybe slightly less today, but 27 regularly here on a Sunday morning. What makes us a community? Not just a collection of individuals gathered here today. Ephesians 2. 15 to 16. His purpose, God's purpose, was to create in himself one new humanity out of the two, thus making peace, and in one body to reconcile both of them, both of those humanities, to God through the cross, by which he put to death their hostility. We often think about Jesus' death on the cross as a way that we can be forgiven so we can have a relationship with God. It is that. Ephesians 2 says it's that. He reconciled us to God. But it's more than that. Jesus recreated a whole new people through his death on the cross. Because he took what separated them from God, he took that away. And what separated them from one another, he took that away. Ever since the 10th chapter of the Bible, Genesis chapter 10, when humanity was divided into nations and languages and spread out over the whole world, ever since then we have been divided. International division. God, Jesus reversed that at the cross. One new humanity, thus making peace. We're not just a people. We are a family. Have a look at verse 19. We are members of God's household, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Christ Jesus himself as the chief cornerstone. Members of God's household, God's family. We are one family, whether we're from El Salvador or India, Wales or Zambia. If We have a relationship with God through Jesus Christ by trusting in his death on the cross. We have joined that family and become part of one big, worldwide, history-wide family. That is our God, who has reversed the division and created one new humanity, one new family made up of people from every tribe and nation. And we here in Easton are a small picture of that new family. As we meet here today, we are a picture that people can look in on and see this is God's family, God's new community, not a collection of individuals, but a family. A family that will last forever. Our earthly physical families are temporary. John Piper, an American pastor, says, "Marriage and family are temporary for this age. The church is forever." Jesus said it. When his mother and his brothers came to speak to him, he said, he pointed to his disciples and said, "Here are my mother and brothers." Jesus said, "Whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and my sister and my mother." We know there'll be no marriage in the new creation because we'll all, as a church family, be married to the groom Christ. Which means we want to live as a family, if we are a family. And that's a big challenge to us, because I think one of the biggest idols for us, especially as Christians, is the family. If we can just get married and have two kids, then life will be okay. All our problems will go because I've got the most important thing that I need in this world. I'm not saying we should abandon our physical family or love them less. I'm not saying we should give more time to our brothers and sisters in our church family than our physical family. Or that we should spend more time doing church ministries than spending with our physical families. What I am saying is that we should treat the people here today, sitting on the rows beside you, above you, below you, as real family. The ones you like, the ones you don't like. The ones you know, the ones you don't know. The ones who are like you, the ones who are different to you. And our families should be outward looking. Inclusive, not inward looking. If we don't treat one another as family, let me tell you what will happen. The single Christian will think it's too hard being single, and they'll find a boyfriend, girlfriend who's not a Christian and marry them. The single Christian who experiences same-sex attraction will think it's not possible to stay single, and they'll stop believing the Bible's teaching on homosexuality. The asylum seeker whose family are 1,000 miles away won't believe the gospel because they don't see it lived out here. The young, newly married couple will go and find a different church where there is family. And we could go on, couldn't we? Listen to Ed Shaw's description of how, Ed Shaw, we know he came to speak to us, didn't he? Of how his church are beginning to act more like a family. This is what he writes in his book. I recommend you getting it, The Plausibility Problem. "I arrive at church meetings and I hug my honorary aunt Ruth, who's just turned 70. She's single too. We've talked about how we both miss physical affection. On a Tuesday evening, I go over to a family who live just around the corner. I overexcite Charlie and Toby just before bedtime. Then I have supper with their patient parents. Midweek, I try to meet up with a group of church friends in a local cafe and catch up on the week. We're a mix of single guys and girls and couples. It works better when there's a a cross-section of people there. On a Thursday night, Jack often comes in on his way back from work. We put the world to rights from a single man's perspective. I've known him since he was a young Christian and student. I've had the pleasure of helping him grow into a mature Christian. On Sundays, in the time between our church meeting and small group, I go for tea with a couple and their two daughters. I've known Simon and Lucy for over 10 years, was the best man at their wedding. We depend on each other for advice. We know about each other's families. I've been chosen as a potential legal guardian to both daughters. Another couple invite me on holidays, open up their home all the time. I've cried through the end of Mary Poppins with their daughter. I hadn't got round to making any plans for my last birthday, so the couple I lead a small group with organized a party. 50 church family members turned up with 2 days' notice. And so on. He carries on. That's how his church are beginning to act more like a family. I'm sure it didn't just happen automatically. It happened as Ed was proactive and was honest about how he found things difficult and what help he needed. And this does happen at Kensington, doesn't it? We are a family and we do act like a family. But here are two ways in which I think maybe we aren't quite so good. This will happen much more so with those who've grown up going to Kensington. Those who've been here for 10, 20, 30, 40, 80 years, who know lots of people, who practically are physical family. What about newer people who don't know so many? And this probably happens much more with those who are similar to us, who it's much easier to get on with. What about those who are different? This is particularly important for us in a multicultural context where we are so different. A community around Christ. A community that celebrates difference. Every community needs to know how to deal with diversity, with difference, and particularly us. With 27 at least different ethnicities, people from 3-4 weeks old to 98 years old. What do we do with difference? Let's turn to Colossians 3. And Paul writes here that Christians have been raised with Christ, verse 1. It's on the screen. You can look it up in your Bibles. Chapter 3, verse 1. Christians have been raised with Christ. When he was raised from the dead, we were raised too. Our lives are now hidden with Christ. Verse 3. His point is that we belong to Christ, that our identity and our future are locked in with his identity and his future. Christ is raised. We are raised. Christ is the Son of God. We are adopted into God's family as children of God. Christ receives his inheritance and glory. We too will receive our inheritance and glory because Christ has done it already. We're locked into that identity and security. So, verse 11, there are no Gentiles or Jews, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, I think Russians they were, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all. The most important thing about us is that we belong to Christ. That's why we are united despite our diversity, because we're united to Christ. We belong to him. This doesn't mean that everything that's different about us just gets thrown out the window. It doesn't mean we all look the same. It means that what's different about us is no longer as important. What's more important is that we belong to Christ. A mature Jamaican Christian will look very similar to a mature Iranian Christian because they belong to Christ. But they will also look different because their differences don't just get thrown out the window. They'll think differently, act differently, look differently. So what do we do with our differences? One option is we just ignore them. Pretend we're all pretty much the same. Well, that would be pretty stupid because we are not the same, are we? We would be trying to form a community that's only skin deep. A fake community. Or we just accept all difference and say that it's all good. Everything about us is all good. Let's accept it all and bring it all together. But that doesn't work because there are some things in all of our cultures that aren't so good. And one of the benefits of being so diverse is that we start to see, as we get challenged, what isn't so good about our own culture. So here's my suggestion for what we do with our difference. First, we show interest. It's a privilege being part of a community that's so different. Show interest in one another's lives. Eat one another's cooking. Learn about our histories and our cultures and why we think differently about these kinds of things. Show interest. Learn more about others and learn from others. To learn, we mustn't look down on other people. Particularly difficult for white British, probably. We used to have an empire. We like looking down on people. And yet we mustn't. We aren't any better than anyone else. I've learned a huge amount from living in Russia, Kenya, Tanzania, from my friends, Russian, Kenyan, Tanzanian friends. What I love about mature African Christians is their faith and prayer life. I realize that I'm a baby Christian compared to the prayer lives and the faith, the trust of some mature African believers in this community here. We show interest, we learn, and we challenge. We recognize there'll be things in our own culture that we don't do so well as in other cultures. Maybe our Western cultures are too reliant on technology and medical knowledge, and so our faith is so small, and our prayer lives are so weak, and our praise is so quiet. Maybe some non-Western cultures have too high a respect for authority, that when someone becomes a pastor in, let's say, an African country, they think they're more important than an ordinary Christian. Maybe ordinary Christians think their pastor is more important than them. I would want to challenge that way of thinking. Here's one about the British. We like our privacy. We like owning houses with gardens, with fences on the sides of our gardens, where we can hide from others. We don't particularly like to open up about what's going on in our hearts. We like talking about the weather, maybe because that's a neutral thing where we can relate to someone without having to open up. It's also a good thing. It enables conversation with strangers. Now, I know that everyone's different. Actually, this is changing. And these days, we see people pouring out their hearts and blubbering away on TV. So we are changing, but it still is a blubbering. I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad thing. But that is still a particular weakness about the British, or maybe just the English. You can tell me afterwards. I'm not saying we go around telling everyone how wrong they are in all these different areas. We can only do this if we know someone well. And even then, we do it with gentleness and with humility and sensitivity, watching out for the log in our own eye as we look at the speck in someone else's eye. So we show interest, we learn from others, we challenge and we celebrate what's good, what's better in other cultures that's not in our culture. Community around Christ, community that celebrates diversity, community that deepens. You may be sitting here thinking, what's the point in talking about community, Tom, when we obviously don't have a community here? I've heard that a family recently left Kensington, and one of the reasons they cited was that there is no community here. I understand that point of view. I think there is community. Many people feel that, but not everyone feels part of that community. Although we've been united to Christ, we don't always act like we belong to Christ. What do we do to become a more united community? Have a look back at Colossians 3. In this passage, Paul wants the Colossian Christians to know who they are, their identity, and therefore to act according to their identity. Identity leads to behavior. Get your identity right, the behavior will then follow. We've discovered their identity, our identity as people who belong to Christ. We've been raised with him. Therefore, we live according to that. Verse 5, put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature. You've been raised with him. Put to death whatever belongs to your earthly nature. Sexual immorality, verse 5. Impurity, lust, evil desires, greed. With those things, you're not going to have a good community. Things that belong to earthly, old nature. But we, verse 10, have put on the new self, being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. We are a new people, a new family, God's family. We need to know who we are first and then behave according to who we are. That's how we become a real community. A place where everyone feels like they belong, a place of intimacy. Verses 12 to 14 show that picture of real community. Have a look and think about those things. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Love is Christ's nature. We belong to Christ. Love is our new nature. We're to clothe ourselves with it. This is how we become more of a community. We love one another, forgiving, showing kindness and compassion. But there are 250 people here. How do we love everyone here? I think it's good to think in terms of lots of circles. Circles of different size. The first circle is the biggest circle, and it includes the whole congregation, as well as visitors who come in each Sunday to have a look and to try out Easton. Our main attitude to everyone, including visitors, we welcome everyone. On Sundays, if you see someone you don't know, go and speak to them. On their own, go and speak to them. Welcome them, show an interest in them. Don't leave it to the welcome team or the pastor. This is a job for everyone. Not just for people here for the first or second time. What about the 20 or so people who settled in the Eastern congregation over the past year? Let's welcome new people. Help integrate them into our new community, our family. Eastern Eats is a great thing for this, our monthly lunch. Often on the first Sunday of the month, it's messy and it's loud, but what a great place to welcome new people, to get to know people we don't know, to sit next to people who we don't know or who are different to us, to live as a family that we are in reality. We welcome everyone. Next circle's a bit smaller, and it includes all members of the church, in particular the Eastern congregation. If you're a member, you've made a formal commitment to the rest of the church, and they've done the same to you. Here's the commitment you've made. You agree that you have a responsibility of love, care, and encouragement to all in the church, and should seek practical ways to do this. So we love our brothers and sisters in this church, care, encourage, and seek practical ways to do that. But we can't do that very well with lots of people. So a smaller circle, a small group. We join a small group, a home group. And we invest in a smaller group of people. A smaller number that we can invest our time, our lives, our effort, our energy, our money in. Get to know them, open up to them, share lives with them, grow together with them, pray with them in a more intentional and deeper way. Provide practical support when someone's ill, when someone's just had a baby. In time, we need a group of people who we do know well. I want to add one more circle. Jesus had around 70 disciples, within that 12 apostles, within that 3 close friends, Peter, James, John. I want to talk about friendship. People who we start to call friends. Now I know we've all got 962 Facebook friends, but I want to talk about a different kind of friendship. A friend who will be there for you when you really need them. A friend who knows you intimately. A friend who you can hang out with and you don't have to talk with them. A friend you can go on holiday with. A friend who knows you and still loves you. Do you have those friends in this community? I know that I'm not a good friend. Maybe that because I'm too task-orientated. I know speaking to particularly some of the men in our community that many of you aren't good at friendship and don't have any friends in this community. That's not a good thing. We're so busy with our work, with our family, with our hobby, with our ministries, whatever it is, that we don't have time for friendship. If we are going to be a Christ-centered community, we need to welcome everyone. Love our brothers and sisters. Invest in a smaller group. And have 2 or 3 close friends. I recently read this excellent book on friendship by Vaughan Roberts. Very small, very easy to read. And he said that friendships are crucial. We must have them. They're close. We have real intimacy. Intimacy isn't just between a husband and a wife. They're constant. We can depend on our friends. They are candid. We are open with our friends so that we grow and become better people through our friendships. Do you have those kinds of relationships outside marriage? Here's another thing where we idolize marriage and family too much. We look for all those things only in our marriage, where we should be seeking it also in a few close friends. If we want friends, they don't just come along and do it, do they? Vaughan Roberts says to have a friend, first of all, you be a good friend. And then you will start to develop friendships. But they take time and effort. Because we are God's family, his new community, created through Jesus' death on the cross, we are to act like it by loving one another. By welcoming everyone, loving fellow members, investing in a few and developing 2 or 3 close friendships. And in time, our community will become more Christ-like, more united. That is something to pray for, isn't it? Lastly, and very quickly, this kind of community attracts. People are looking for community. They're looking for intimacy and love and a place to belong and be themselves. If we have this kind of community, we'll be attractive and people will come in and meet Jesus in us. Next Saturday in our open day, that's what we'll be offering. an attractive community with Jesus at the center.